All right, here's how this goes. It's called a podcast. First time I've done this. Hopefully not the last. That's the plan, at least. This would be episode one, January-ish, late January. Polar vortex coming down, freezing the heinies off all the little bunnies outside. But you got to start somewhere. Now we're going to start right here and right now.
Show voice, that's not good. Don't do that.
I'm just enunciating.
It's like your show.
I am enunciating.
It's like when you pose for your photos and you're all like, and I'm like, don't do that.
Just be natural?
Yeah.
Well, how do you be natural?
Talk like you're talking at the dinner table.
So when you are doing your NHD performance, will you be natural or will you be on stage?
Well, I'm going to be in character.
Oh, and what is your character?
But see, with a podcast, you're just being you.
Sometimes.
This podcast is kind of about you, in a way.
That's true.
Meaning that you should probably act like you, and this isn't you.
But are you really being you, or are you being an enhanced you? Your best you.
Well, you can try to be your best you, but I don't think that that's good.
You don't think that this is the best me? And so who would the best me be?
The one that's watching The Good Place and eating food.
Eating food?
Yes.
Watching The Good Place. Uh-huh. Like giant shrimp.
Like you're just laughing, you know? You're just like, hi, I'm here.
Okay.
So just back be there.
Be there.
Because I'll be there. You got a friend.
So who wrote You've Got a Friend?
I have no idea.
Really? Really?
We sing it in school.
Well, hold on. This is interesting. Because you're a big fan of what show you watch almost every single day with your mom?
Gilmore Girls?
Correct. And the theme from the Gilmore Girls, the Gilmore Girls theme song.
Feeling lonely and so cold.
Sounds a lot like
You Got a Friend.
And why does it sound so much like that?
Because they were written by the same person.
Who is? You can't Google it. You just have to know.
I'm Quit not show. On my phone. I'm not Googling.
It was Carole King.
I know. I knew that. I was like, it's the lady who owns the music store.
Lady who owns the music store. Exactly. Right. Well, hopefully we can be friends here and talk about the podcast.
If you can be you.
I will do my best to be me. Can you be you?
And I just can't wait to be he.
So in two Thursdays, who are you going to be?
I'm going to be Mia Wenzel performing an individual performance or a monologue about 1950s advertising.
1950s advertising.
No.
Oh, yes.
Don't make me want to punch you in the face, Dad.
Your interest in the 1950s goes beyond this project, though.
It does.
Hairspray. Grease.
That's 1962.
Yeah, but it's early 60s. It's still kind of they're pushing back against the 50s.
Grease is 1958 through 1959.
There you go.
Because it's the school year. 50s. School right. Years happen over the winter.
Good point.
And New Year's.
Good point. Yes. All right. So why this interest in the 50s?
Well, it really started with Grease, I guess, because I like Grease, and I was listening to the CD, and on the Grease like soundtrack CD. It has all the songs that they play, like, at the dance and stuff. Like, all the other songs that aren't, like, the Grease songs. And I was like, wow, this is some nice songs. I want songs that, like, kind of sound like that, you know, with, like, the doo-wops and such. And then I went on Spotify, and I went to the All Out 50s, like, Greatest Hits playlist. And I listened to that, and I liked it. And then I was watching, like, music videos. And then, you know, like, with Grease, like, they're, like, the diners and such, and, like, all of that.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
You did a lot of research for this project.
I did quite a bit.
Any great sources that you found?
Well, most of what I'm talking about is coming from the Feminine Mystique.
The Feminine Mystique.
Yes.
Who's that by?
Betty Friedan. It's a great book. And because she was a housewife. So she was a writer. She had all these dreams to be a writer. And then she became a housewife because everybody else was. And then she was one of the leaders of, like, civil rights movement for women. Because obviously when you think about civil rights movement, you think of a lot of, like, black power and all that. But just women in general fighting for their rights was still a big thing. She was one of those. And I saw one review, and it was, like, this book truly throws a brick.
Trudy throws a brick?
No, this really...
Sorry.
This book truly throws a brick.
Okay, so the title isn't Trudy.
No, this is a review, and they said this.
Okay.
No, it says, this book truly throws a brick into the rose-colored window of the 1950s suburban home. Because it does, it opens it up, and it really shows you what was happening. And she interviewed, like, I think it was, like, over 500 housewives. And she just talked to all of them. She talked to therapists and she talked to all these people to really understand. She says that advertising and other things, but she talks about advertising quite a bit. And that's my focus, is that it created the feminine mystique, which was the ideal woman and all of what a woman should be and housewives and all of that. And then it also talks about the problem that has no name, which was the there's something missing type of thing.
So Gloria Friedan, am I saying that right?
Betty Friedan?
So, Betty Friedan.
Where'd you get Gloria from?
Gloria Steinem? Yeah, all right. So, Betty Friedan.
Betty Friedan.
A different author, right? Betty Friedan came up with this term, the problem...
That has no name.
The problem that has no name. Okay.
Because it was a form of depression, as we can assess it as now. But back then, you know, depression was pretty taboo. Like, depression was only, like, really, really bad. It wasn't just like, oh, yeah, depression's normal. A lot of people have depression. It wasn't like one of those things like it is now.
Right.
And so the problem that has no name was the feeling that something was missing out of your life and that, like, you didn't really know, like, where you were going and what was happening and, like, what wasn't right. Because you knew that something wasn't right, but you didn't know what it was. And so she talks about how when she first decided to write the book, and, like, the very beginning, was that she was sitting at a coffee shop. And then in the table next to her, there were three housewives that were all, like, obviously friends, having, like, a little, like, type of lunch, like, together, just, like, having some tea. Mm-hmm. And that they, like, and that one of them was, like, talking about how, like, something wasn't right. And then her friends were like, I feel it too. And then they all just started crying because of, like, happiness, because they knew that they weren't alone. And then she was like, wow, this is real. Something's going on here. Betty never really experienced this herself. Or at least she doesn't say so in the book, but because she did continue writing for so long. Because she was writing for a really long time, and then she stopped for only like 2 years before she started writing again. So because she was writing, and she worked on magazines, like women's magazines, and she kind of saw that shift. So she always had a job, pretty much, and she never... experienced it the way other people did. So that's why I think in part that she interviewed so many housewives. And she interviewed them from all across the bar. She interviewed them from elite, like, mansion homes, rich, like, you have a lot of money, to, like, lower middle class homes. Like, and then, you know, and then a majority of them were the average suburban house, like, very middle class, just run of the mill family. And then she also interviewed the therapists and the psychiatrists to talk to them about their findings. But she said that none of them really understood But she come up because she interviewed so many, she kind of put it all together.
Gotcha. So did she ever give a name to the problem that has no name?
No, it's just, well, she gave it the name of the problem that has no name. Right.
Like the love that dare not speak its name. Mm. That was what they called being gay for a while.
Oh.
As a euphemism.
They talk about...
Oscar Wilde. I'm sure it's Oscar Wilde.
They talk about gayness in the problem, in the feminine mystique as well.
Really? Like lesbian gayness or just gayness? Just in general.
Mostly for, like, homosexual males.
Okay.
Because she was talking to the therapist and that's what they were talking about. Was that a lot. Because a lot of the men would be gay. That, like, they would, that the housewives would marry. And then during the chapter about, like, I think it's called, like, the sex seekers. And it's about the housewives that felt like, oh, having these affairs will help me. And they didn't. But a lot of them did it because they were like, yeah, my husband doesn't like women.
Right.
And they were like, okay.
But they this isn't working over here, so I'll try something over there.
But they couldn't have a divorce because that would be bad at the time. Sure. Like, if you had a divorce, it was like, oh, scandal. What are you going to do about the kids? Because obviously you had kids. Because you couldn't not have kids. Unless, like, you were failing to have kids. But, like, if your ovaries are fine and you're not having kids, then you're insane, was pretty much the mindset. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. You did a lot of research.
Yes. I have.
Are there any other eighth graders that have read The Feminine Mystique?
Or probably not.
Okay. At your school, you're
definitely
the only one?
At my school, I'm the only one.
The only one. Gotcha.
Pretty much the only one.
All right.
Like, so you're in a special history kid. Of... the entirety of the school, I'm pretty sure I'm the only one. I'm sure when it came out, more eighth graders.
Maybe.
Probably. Maybe. I mean, our school is that old.
How did your teachers react to this assignment, to this project? Were they supportive? Had they heard of Betty Friedan?
Nobody had really heard of Betty Friedan, because I feel like the only person would have is my English teacher, like my ELA teacher. But, you know, she's really young, and she hadn't heard of it yet. She's not, like, old and, like, yeah, like, you know, she's not that teacher. She's young.
She's like, I remember that book when it first came out.
Yeah, she's not one of those
I put
teachers.
It on my Christmas list, but my mother wouldn't buy it for me.
Yeah, she's not one of those teachers. She's young, she's fun, like, she's a great teacher, but she hadn't heard of that book. And my social studies teacher, and this was the person who was, you know, mainly coordinating my National History Day project of this, and she was full-fledged in support because she had done a college paper on 1950s advertising when she was in college. And so then she was like, oh my gosh, this is gonna be so much fun, and she was like really supportive of it, which was good. And then some of my other teachers, like, I just told them my topic and I was like, yeah, it's
bunny.
That was the biggest bunny in the world. Oh, hot dang. That was a big bunny. Okay.
Hot dang. Big bunny just walked by the window.
But with some of my other teachers, you know, like, they were like, oh, did you move on for, like, National History Day? And I'd be like, yeah. And they would be like, oh, that's cool. What's your topic? And I would just be like, oh, it's just, you know, like, sexist print advertising in the 1950s. And they'd be like, oh, yeah, that's cool. Like, they wouldn't, like, really care about it. I think it's kind of unheard of, especially because you knew that, like, housewives were oppressed. And you know that was happening, but nobody really considered the fact that advertising caused it. They knew that advertising was bad in the 1950s, that was sexist, because there's lots of articles on that, like on BuzzFeed and other, like, pop culture things. But nobody thought it would really caused it. They were like, oh, it's just contributing to it, with the flow.
But you found evidence that there was actually a push from Madison Avenue, from the Mad Men, all that stuff. There was actually a push to get the women back out of the factories, back into the houses, to get past World War II, normalize things.
And it was such a, like, an intense turn because the advertising was what pushed them into the factories in the first place. Because most women were housewives back, like, most women were housewives just because, you know, it was, like, what was, like, comfortable for them. Advertising was like, no, like, everybody needs to work in these factories, fill the jobs that the men left behind to become soldiers. But then when the soldiers had to come back because the war was over, the advertising told them to leave.
Gotcha. So, like, trends. So, for a while, Rosie the Riveter was trending.
Yes.
That was the cool thing to be.
Uh-huh.
For maybe half a dozen years tops, right? And then the trend changed.
It would be, like, hashtag factory life nowadays. Right. And then it would be, like,
yeah.
Hashtag, like, best mom ever life, you know?
Right.
But actually, Mad Men, if you're looking at Mad Men, you're looking at that, it's really realistic, honestly, and really similar. Because Mad Men was, it started, I think Mad Men starts in 1961, like its early 60s, which is right after 1950s. So it's really the right time period. Or Donna Reed's show, if you've heard of that, it's a show, it's like a family sitcom showing like the life of a 1950s housewife who is Donna Reed. And that is starts in, the first season was 1959. And that's accurate too, other than the fact that, you know, Donna Reed is like one of the very few housewives that was fully satisfied with it and really happy. Because most housewives weren't Donna Reed. Most housewives wanted to be Donna Reed because that's what advertising showed them was Donna Reed. But then they couldn't be Donna Reed and they didn't want to be Donna Reed, but they had to be Donna Reed. And then the full circle of events. So, yeah.
I know. It's hard to be Donna Reed.
It's hard to be Donna Reed.
Yeah. So who was the Donna Reed of your generation? For good or for ill? Who's up there? Who's in the media? Who's put on a pedestal? Who do you want to be?
Who do I want to
be? Yeah. Girls your age. Eighth graders coming up. Entering high school.
Like, averagely? Or, like, for me? Because I want to be Frida Kahlo. But, like, that's not really normal.
Right. I mean, it depends. She's also not current.
She is not current.
Right.
No.
Who's the ideal? Is it a Kardashian? Is it a Jenner?
Not really.
Is it a Taylor Swift?
It's kind of like more of the Katy Perry type, I guess, right now. Because right now it's like very feminist with hashtag MeToo movement and all of that. It's very like empowering.
Okay.
Like, go you women, like you're sick, you know? Sick being a good thing. Like, it's very like, like, you know, like things like getting married or being in a relationship are, like, sometimes even looked down on now. Like, oh, like, you have a boyfriend.
You need, like, to be independent.
Yeah, like, you should be independent. You should be having a job. And actually now, especially, like, when the civil rights movement first started picking up, women that said that they didn't want to be housewives anymore, then the women that were Donna Reed that did want to be housewife, they were, like, very offended by it. Felt, like, disrespectful, like, how dare you? Mm-hmm. Like, I love this. Like, this is my life. Are you, like, saying that my life is bad? And so it's kind of like that now with everybody being, like, independent and everything.
So you think it's gone too far?
I wouldn't say that it's gone too far, but I would say that to each their own, and that everybody should be what makes them happy. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to be a stay-at-home mom, be a stay-at-home mom. If you want to, like, be a CEO, be a CEO.
That sounds like a good message. I like that.
Because, like, society is whack.
It's whack. So, exactly.
Just don't listen to it. Just, like, think about what makes you happy.
Right. You do you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Frida Kahlo.
Frida Kahlo.
Why Frida Kahlo?
Because she's awesome.
I'll give you that.
She has a unibrow.
She has a unibrow.
I have a unibrow.
Wasn't going to mention it, but...
It's the truth.
There you go. There you go. But she's also very talented.
And she has a lot of monkeys, and that's fun.
I did not know she had a lot of monkeys.
Well, I don't think she actually owned monkeys, but she, like, paints them.
She paints monkeys. Okay. Monkeys. Yeah.
I just think Frida Kahlo, and she was just very to her own. She was very, like, she was very her.
Very true.
Like, she was very, like, I don't care about society. Like, no.
Mm-mm. That's right. You and do me.
Like, what I want to be is I just want to be me.
Right.
And she was very her.
Gotcha. So she hashtag lived her best life.
Yes.
That's beautiful. Okay, so you have NHG coming up.
The, I do.
So you were a finalist in your school competition.
Yes. So it all started off in our classrooms, so we just had to present our projects. So with National History Day, you can be a performance, a paper, a website, an exhibit like a poster board, or a documentary. So I chose to do individual performance. So I play a housewife, and then I play a marketer, and then I play like a modern single mom. Well, not a single mom, but just like an average, typical, like, working mom. And then it's a monologue, so it's hard to memorize. And it's 10 minutes of just me talking. I like it because I avoided all, like, the drama of, like, a group project.
So once again, it's an independent project. Yes. Because you like being independent, because that's what a woman should be now.
No.
You should do you.
You should do you.
Okay.
And that's another reason why I wanted to be solo, was because that meant that I could really do, like, my artistic vision. And I didn't have to, like, listen to anybody else or compromise. Because
so you're like the Frida Kahlo of NHD.
I wouldn't go that far because not really.
Not worthy.
Not worthy right now.
Okay.
But sure.
You'll take it.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Okay. So things went well, though. On the school level, you're a finalist. Mm-hmm. So what's the next step?
Next step is regionals/city. Where we are, we call it city just because, like, only it's pretty much city.
We're in the big city in the region, so.
Yes, and then there's just, like, the really small, like, farm town. So it's pretty much city.
Same folks.
But then when you get into, like, California and stuff, regionals/city is, like, like, if you lived in Los Angeles, it would be, like, all of the areas around Los Angeles.
Sure.
Like, that would be all of it.
Yeah.
And then if that goes well, then I get to go to state.
Do you think your odds are good? Good chances?
Miss Bell believes in me.
Okay.
And that's what's important, right?
That is. Well, she's experienced. She's your teacher.
She's my teacher.
Yeah, she knows the layout. So that's a...
But then again, she said that we were all going to go to state, and we know that that's not going to happen because there's with other topics.
She is very encouraging.
She is.
That's good. Yeah.
She is really supportive of everybody.
So when people see your presentation, what do you want them to remember from it?
Remember that this was kind of the 1950s advertising was kind of the origin of all of the, like, feminism and sexism that's happening in current culture. Because if it wasn't for the 1950s, and, like, if advertising didn't exist in the 1950s, I doubt that, like, there would be as much, like, oppression towards women today. Mm-hmm. Like, there really wouldn't be. And obviously that's changed a lot just in the past, like, 2 years. Like, the past 2 years and, like, 3 years have been insane in terms of, like, feminists and all of that. And, like, women's marches and, like, politics.
Right.
And I'm not saying it's bad.
Pink hats and all that, right.
Some of it was needed to be done. Like, did we go a little overboard? Yeah. But, like, I mean, did I march in a women's march? Yes, I did.
You did.
You were there, too.
Okay. Did I march with you?
I got a hat, even.
You did.
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
A nice lady gave it to me.
Yeah. I think a nice lady had me buy it for you.
Yes.
But that's fine, too.
Technically, Mom bought it, so.
It was handmade. Locally crafted.
It was. Locally all crafted.
All organic.
I doubt that. It was like neon pink felt that she got at Hobby Lobby. Well, but.
Yeah. She still worked hard on it.
She still sewed it.
That's right. It looked good.
But yes. So that was a good memory.
All right.
And I mean, it's like, it's just a lot of stuff. And it's like, why can't humans just be humans? So I think it feels really overboard and it feels like a lot was happening. But in reality, a lot has been happening in the past that didn't need to be happened anyways. In terms of, like, oppression towards women.
Mm-hmm.
So then when, like, the women start fighting back, is it all called for? Maybe. And maybe, like, it would have made more sense if it was over a longer period of time and not in the short span of, like, 2 years. But, like, it still happened. It still helped. Mm-hmm. And it still changed.
Sure. Oh, that happens a lot, historically speaking. Oh, let's look at the civil rights movement more broadly, which is mostly African-Americans demanding their rights. You know, but that oppression had gone on for almost 100, or actually, yeah, almost exactly 100 years since the Civil War. You know, but things changed within a few years pretty rapidly with Martin Luther King. You know, it came to a point of crisis. So sometimes change is fast, but the issues and, change is...
So, like, had all of that oppression happened in the span of 2 years, it probably would have felt like just as much as all of the, like, feminist movement has happened. Mm-hmm. It's just, it happened over a longer period of time.
Right. But when change happens, sometimes it's like an avalanche. You know, there's a boulder.
Like, if you...
There's a snowball. It's been waiting. It's been hanging there. It's been ready to go for a long time, and then finally, boom! Right.
Like, if you have a book, and you read a page a day, and it takes you, like, 3 years, you're gonna be like, yeah, I didn't read at all. like barely at all. But if you read that entire book in one day, it's still the same amount of reading, but it felt like a lot more.
Right.
Felt like a tome hit your head.
Boom. Tome to the head.
Tome to the head.
Just like, what's the tome that hit your head?
The Feminine Mystique.
The Feminine Mystique.
The Feminine Mystique.
Very nice.
Still reading it.
Excellent, excellent. Still diving in. All right. Well, make sure you put a link to that in the show notes.
We will.
And a link to some other sources you'll recommend, and perhaps some highlights of some of the most offensive sexist advertising that you came across. And I saw your, I saw your school level
performance. And I did mess up a lot and like freestyled literally the second half, but that's fine.
That's okay. That's okay. Yeah. I saw that, and there were quite a few advertisements you found which were definitely sexist. There were a lot of spanking.
Yeah.
There was quite a bit of spanking, so.
Van Heusen shirts, I'm coming for you.
There you go.
Just kidding. Exactly. Please don't sue us. Right. Please do not sue us.
But check out the website to see some examples. And Mia, thank you so much for being here.
Mm-hmm.
It's been great having you as a guest.
Yeah.
Did you have fun?
Sure.
Okay. Was it a good way to review your thoughts before the next level of competition?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the annotated bibliography is going to be a lot of that, because I have to go through every single source that I've used for the past 3 months of researching, and then say what I got out of all of them. So that's going to be a really nice review.
Sounds like a lot of work too.
That's like 50 paragraphs.
50 paragraphs. All right.
I have like a solid 47 sources, and you write like a paragraph per source. So yeah.
Yeah. So this is pretty serious. It's not just like a fun 10-minute little skit. It's.
I mean, the main winners get like a scholarship to the University of Virginia.
Really?
Uh-huh.
No. Would you like to go there? If you got a scholarship? No. Why not?
Well, I mean, I think that it's like only in history.
Oh.
And. I don't think their graphic design program is that great.
No.
Haven't heard anything about it in a lot of research.
But if it's free.
True.
Yeah. We'll talk about that. Wonderful. All right. Thank you so much. Thank you for granting me that. Can you say it?
I say thanks for granting me that?
Yeah, see, I'll grant you that.
Well, I'll grant you that.
I am the psychologist.
C'est moi qui t'ai vu le premier.
I am the psychologist.
Vraiment?
You can hate me as much as you like. But it's you who wants to know things for me.
Passionnant.
Tell me about your past.
Dites-moi davantage.
You are not different from anyone else.
Oui, passionnant.
No, I tell you, yes!
Tu veux ma photo?
And your mother? Interesting.
All right, so what am I listening to now? Marie Davidson. Marie Davidson is a French-Canadian electronica musician. She is from Quebec, so she'd be Quebecois. Isn't my pronunciation just fascinating? She's put out maybe 4 records under her own name at this point, but this is the first one that I have heard, so it is new to me. It's called Working Class Woman. Working Class Woman, of course, and evokes a lot of other working class titles in the past. You've got echoes of Rick Springfield, the Working Class Dog. You got John Lennon, the Working Class Hero. You've got all that in there. But I think you'll find this isn't exactly a Springsteen-esque ode to the satisfaction of working an honest shift. I don't know. It's more of a compulsion, more of a tick, more of something she can't help but do. I think there's a word for that. But let's listen to her describe it. Here is the standout track from the album Working Class Woman. It's called Work It.
You wanna know how I get away with everything? I work all the fucking time. From Monday to Friday, Friday to Sunday, I love it. I work. So when I say come on, I mean come on. You've got to work with me. want to see any fake ass workers. I need real builders. Work. Work it. Work. Work to be a winner. Sweat. Work it. Sweat. Sweat to be a winner. I want to smell you. Yeah, I want to smell you. I want to smell you even from far away. I want to smell you. I want to feel you. So I can know if you're a winner, baby.
Work.
Work it.
Work.
Work to be a winner.
How do I get away with what I do? I work. All the fucking time. Can't argue with that, can you? Because it's true. You can get away with a lot of stuff if you put in the time. If you're, you know, if you're the first guy in the door in the morning, last guy to leave, always willing to go the extra mile to make sure the client's happy. Yeah, you can get away with a lot of drop balls. Actually, you can get away with a lot of lack of talent. As they say, the harder I work, the luckier I get. Yeah, nothing wrong with that. I grew up on that stuff, and it's true. It's true. A lot of people can speak to that. But I gotta say, at this point in my life, it just sounds exhausting. I'm just gonna be honest. I appreciate it, and it's motivating to hear it, and I'm glad she's doing it. And I remember being there when I was in my 20s, and just pushing through and burning the midnight oil, and feeling that that great romantic exuberance of youth and that stamina. But, you know, it wears off. And I've got a feeling it's wearing off for Marie as well. I think she's probably 30-ish at this point. And I have a feeling that she wouldn't be writing about it unless she felt it going away. If the work was something which she was doing easily at this point, I don't think it would be a topic. I think she'd just do it. I don't think she'd question it. But the fact that she's thinking about it, and the fact that this record goes off the rails in a few points, again, surrounding that topic of work and psychotherapy, I have a feeling that she feels those days are slipping past her. Anyways, it's a fantastic record if you're at the gym. Some of the beats are just right for the treadmill. You can picture the 80s ladies with their pink leotards and their puffy socks and their headbands bouncing to the beat. Little Richard Simmons in the background, egging them on. And I'm glad she's out there working it for all of us slackers.
Man, I think she's faking her accent. I mean, nobody talks like that. So, frankly, is this album about taking risks?
Oh, hi. I'd like to play you guys out with something. I do sing. I do write songs. I've been doing this off and on for a long, long time. So, anyhow, it's better to work out your ideas in public with friends. Friends like you. So here's a song I've been working on. It's called Mexico. It explores a very familiar theme in classic rock music. Mainly the need to escape, the need to go away. And this idea that somewhere south of the border, there's a place where it's all better. It's kind of silly, but I'm not the first guy to think so. Steve Earle talks about it. Paul Simon talks about it. James Taylor talks about it. So, you know, I'm in good company. That being said, this is my take on it. Well, maybe tomorrow I'll go to Mexico. Someplace in the sun where all the tourists go. Well, I'll make some new friends. I'll find a seaside bar and get paid in Coronas for playing my guitar. Three sets a show songs everybody knows about wasting away and brown-eyed girls. Well, come down to find me. You know I love to see your face. We'll talk about some old times and laugh at our mistakes. And when you go back, will you tell him I'm a star? I'm getting paid in Dos Equis for playing my guitar. Well, three sets a night, making everybody feel alright, about wasting away and brown-eyed girls. Yeah, man, tomorrow let's go to Mexico, someplace near Oaxaca, where all the tourists go. And we'll make some new friends. Well, we'll find a surfside bar and get paid in Modelos for playing our guitars. And then I'll forget all of my regrets about wasting away and brown-eyed girls.